family and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and they are tuned in to the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Welcome to Tim and Friends. Hope you are happy and healthy, or at least on your way there as we get the week started. Episode 21. Hope you had a good Easter or Passover if you were celebrating. If you weren't celebrating, hey, happy stat holiday, my friend. I'm Tim McAuliffe, and this one is going to be a little bit different. For those who don't know, the Toronto Blue Jays are currently playing the Rangers over on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So that leaves us on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet West ahead of the Habs Oilers from Montreal, and no radio. So we have the ability to go a little bit more visual today. And that's a good thing, because the world needs more fat bald heads. Just ask Larry David, kids. So that means we might work in a cut or uncut, maybe a match game. Going to have some fun on today's show, because Lord knows we could all use a little levity these days, especially given the stark contrast of our world right now. Like, not lost on me or anyone in this room right now that the Canucks are dealing with a terrible outbreak of COVID-19 and its variant in BC. Ontario is back on lockdown, whatever the hell passes for a lockdown in Ontario, and the Jays are playing the Rangers at a sold-out Globe Life Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Over 40,000 on hand for the home opener in Arlington, Texas. I sure hope they know what the hell they're doing. But for some reason, I'm not entirely convinced. I digress. I think I digress. I don't know if that's a digression. Either way, right now, as we speak, Jays off to a really good start. They're in the bottom of the third inning. It is 4-0 for the Jays. Steven Matz is 7-up. 7 down for the Toronto Blue Jays as you take a live look at Mr. Matz leading 4-0, bottom of the third. One. So again, if you want, you can flick over to that game. I won't hold it against you. I understand. I enjoy live baseball too. But if you're going to stick with us, no first things first today. Just our absolute best to the Vancouver Canucks franchise and their families after the total number of players and staff that have tested positive is up over 20. As of yesterday, 16 of the 22 players on the active roster were on the NHL's COVID list, with reports of the Brazilian variant P1 hitting the team harder than most that we've seen hit professional athletes. As if we need another reminder, despite workplace protocols that are pretty strict, daily testing, PPE all over the place, more than 50% of the team was infected. I don't care if they don't return to play. I just want the players, the staff, and their families to be okay. Now, if you care when they're back, in an email to the Canadian Press, Bill Daly says that the Canucks numbers are, quote, concerning from a health and safety standpoint, not necessarily from a scheduling standpoint, and that he believes that they will be able to conclude their 56-game schedule. I guess if he's talking to the team, we could take that as good news at this point. Daly also said that the league will not change its protocols in the aftermath of the Canucks situation. Now, I would hope most teams could do that on their own. Like, maybe if a guy returns a positive test and he's on the ice, you just stop the practice. But I'm no doctor. Again, full stadium in Texas. Some airborne transmission, but what the hell do I know? If you want, this game's available to you. Score in Arlington, 4-0 in favor of the Blue Jays, who started off hotter than a firecracker. I don't know if you could have done much better than they did in New York against the favorite to not only win the American League East, but the favorite to win the American League, period. The Jays look really good, and they continue to look good against the Texas Rangers and Mike Foltynewicz. All right, back to hockey. Three games in the North tonight, including a rematch of the lone game in our home and native land last night, as the Leafs remain in Calgary to battle the Flames after a 4-2 Leafs win last night. The Flames now have just two wins in their last 10 games and seem to be slipping quicker than you can say, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. After the Tavares/Hanifin goal last night, it felt like the Calgary Flames season was over. I mean, there was no energy in the building, in their legs, nothing. They looked defeated and deflated. And that's with Daryl Sutter as your head coach. I mean, how many more must wins can the Flames lose? They're now 6 points back of the Habs, and Montreal has 5 games in hand. The only saving grace is that Calgary has 5 more head-to-head matchups with Montreal left. Otherwise, I would have absolutely no problem saying the jam is done in Calgary even then. I feel like I'm stretching more than when your mom tells everyone, hey, relax, it's just a game. Meanwhile, the Leafs keep rolling. Now 6 points clear in the North. Out here winning tight games with their backup goalies looking all good and stuff. Last two seasons, the Leafs were below 500 with anyone not named Freddie Anderson in between the pipes. This year, they're 12-3-1 with a 185 goals against average and a 935 save percentage. What in the good name of Bunny LaRocque are we talking about here? Add 13-4-1 on the road and are the Toronto Maple Leafs, quietly showing that this is a different team capable of playing tight, hard-fought games when it matters most? Doesn't matter if I say that, you won't believe it till the postseason. So I'm not fighting that fight. It's like telling those dudes again, it's just a game. By the way, watch the mom in the background. I'm pretty sure we probably should have muted that. The 3 games tonight. Leafs, Flames, 2 electric boogaloo. Oilers, Habs from Montreal. And those pesky Sens, fresh off a 6-3 win in Montreal, head to Winnipeg to face the Jets. Here's a stat for you. The Ottawa Senators are one of 2 teams in the NHL this year that have not been shut out all season long. I repeat, there are only 2 teams in the National Hockey League that have not been shut out this year. It's the Washington Capitals and those pesky Ottawa Senators. We'll hear from Eric Engels, Ryan Leslie later on. Also, a guy working with the Sens young core a little later on. His name's Dave Smart. As if that weren't enough, on the network tonight, the Raptors look to make it 2 in a row after blowing out the Warriors on Friday night. They host the Wizards in Tampa. Brad Fay and the crew have the pregame starting at 6:30 Eastern. We will hit you with the rap. Excuse me. We will hit the Raptors with both of our co-hosts today, Sportsnet's Donovan Bennett and, as mentioned, former Carleton University head coach Dave Smart. The latter will also weigh in on the NCAA men's basketball tournament final tonight, just after 9 p.m. And if we get anything like we got from the women last night in their final, we're in for a treat. And shout out the ladies. Honestly, from where we started, a weight room more ridiculous than our vaccine rollout, to where that tournament ended with intrigue, drama, and record ratings on the women's side. All that sounds like the start of a really big show. And if that weren't enough, I haven't even brought up Shohei Ohtani. And before you think, hey, baseball fans are watching that baseball game going on in Arlington right now, I sincerely think you need to hold on. This thing transcends baseball. Last night, in like a 10-minute span of time, I saw something nobody in the world has ever seen before, and it's not hyperbole. It was jaw-dropping. Ohtani, who I mentioned a couple times at a crazy spring training, followed it up with his first start of the season, and he also hit second. If you think I'm exaggerating the never seen before, This was the first time a pitcher was hitting second in a batting order since 1903. So unless you're 119 years old or something, make a relax. You've never seen this before. It was also the first time since 1976. I was 1 year old that an AL team willingly gave up its DH spot. And even then, when it happened, the pitcher was hitting eighth, not second in the lineup. As if that weren't enough, Ohtani hit 101 on the radar gun in the top of the first. That's 101 miles an hour. And in the bottom half, he did this. And do me a favor. When you watch what he did, listen for the crack of the bat. It's disgusting.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Oh, man! Lean into it! That ball was crushed.
Wow.
That was ridiculous. Santa Maria.
Just to recap, hitting as high as 101 on the radar gun. And by the way, if you didn't see that ball land, you weren't alone. It's okay. It was a 450-foot home run. In fact, he hit 101 and then a 450-foot bomb about 10 minutes apart in the same game. Ohtani owned and owns the hardest thrown pitch by a starter this season and the hardest hit ball of the season by any player, according to ESPN stats and info. Again, hardest hit ball, hardest thrown ball. No starting pitcher had homered anywhere in the first seven spots of the batting order since some guy named Babe Ruth in 1933. And in the last 50 years, only eight times has a pitcher homered in the first inning because they're never in the order that high, or you've got to bat through that entire order to get down to eight or nine, wherever that pitcher would hit. All of this got digital producer Jesse Rubinoff and I and our whole damn crew thinking about a match game. And here's how it goes. Ohtani's home run was the best thing I've heard since blank. Again, Ohtani's home run was the best thing I've heard since blank. Because the crack of the bat. Can we rack the crack of the bat up one more time for Jesse and I to enjoy? Just listen.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Lean into it. That ball was crushed.
Wow.
That was ridiculous. Santa Maria.
Am I alone to think this was ridiculous? Or do... I mean, we tweeted it out last night and it went. Like, it's ridiculous.
I mean, my answer to the match game would be probably ever. Because that... If you're a sports fan, like, I could listen to that over and over and over again. It just... The sound is... It's a beautiful thing for a sports fan.
Please don't hit us with the where the mics were. We understand that sometimes mics are closer. We understand that sometimes you get a truer sense of it. But just how far that ball flew, you know it was clean. And you also know that the microphone was good enough to catch.
Yeah, you made a great point, too, because just that on top of what he's also able to do on the mound. Like, if you're going to a game right now, is there someone in the major leagues that would be a hotter ticket if everybody was going to games now?
You got Trout and Ohtani on the same team. Lock and loaded. By the way, day of the Jays parade, I was supposed to take my son to see Mike Trout at the Rogers Center. We never got there.
One day. One day we'll get there.
Now we'll add Ohtani to the match.
All right, you want to go through some match game answers? Okay. So just to refresh, Ohtani's home run was the best thing I've heard since... My name is Lloyd says a restaurant erupted with Opa as a waiter, waitress dropping a full tray of plates.
All right, so we go Greek on the first one.
Pretty good.
Although Cam doesn't seem like a Greek name.
Ohtani's home run was the best thing I've heard since the crowd for this home run.
Yes.
I think, honestly, the sound of Ohtani's bat hitting the ball would have been the only thing that could have made the Jose Bautista home run better than it actually was.
And it was too loud in the park for you to hear the crack of the bat.
Yeah.
But both no doubters, I'm with you on that one. The roar of the crowd was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. Yeah. Ohtani's home run was the best thing I've heard since Bush Party tonight.
Bush party. Bush party tonight.
Timothy Lindgren is the name. Tyler says,
spelled Bush party wrong, but whatever.
Yeah, it's okay. We look past that. Otani's home run was the best thing I've heard since the World Junior penalty music from 2 years ago. Hashtag Timid Friends.
It's amazing.
Hashtag match game.
We got to get that music. That should be our new match game music.
Music? Yeah. We got to replace this one. Otani's home run was the best thing I've heard since. Vinny says, best thing I've heard since the sizzling sound of steaks and burgers hitting the barbecue grill. It's about that time. April 5th now. People getting ready to throw.
What do you mean get ready? I've done it like 10 times already. What are you talking about getting ready?
With the TV in the backyard? I don't care. Fired up?
I'll do it in the winter. Shout out to Seb. Seb, our cameraman, just said to do it in the winter. Me too. Put the toque on. Let's go.
Danny says, Otani's home run was the best thing I've heard since Roseanne Barr singing the American national anthem. Maybe being a little bit facetious there is Danny. Cause
yeah, sarcasm.
Roseanne wasn't pretty. It was not a pretty sight.
The song wasn't pretty.
The song wasn't, of course.
Roseanne is a beautiful woman.
Yes, the song wasn't pretty. That's all we got.
That's all we got. Nice ending on that high note.
Of course, the song.
The song. Otani's home run was the best thing I've heard since blank. Best thing I've heard since blank is the match game. And putting on a show indeed. All right, we're going to try and put on a show. Still to come, former Carleton head coach and Canadian basketball legend Dave Smart on the Raptors and the NCAA tournaments. Plus, we head to the rinks in Montreal and Calgary. And next up, Donovan Bennett joins me in studio for this Monday edition of Tim and Friends.
Brady Tkachuk drops the gloves. The 21-year-old against big 35-year-old Shea Weber. This might be a little too much youthful exuberance. Maybe not.
Maybe not. 5 seconds left. McDonald, 2 seconds. McDonald trapped. Heaves. Can't hit. That is it. Stanford survives again.
Gonzaga has time to do something. Suggs for the win.
Welcome back to Tim and Friends. My name is Tim McAuliffe, and my first co-host of the day was also dubbed the first friend of the show, a title he promptly denounced. So instead, I will simply say he is a multi-talented star of all things Sportsnet. Website, streaming, TV, does it all. And he does it with style. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Donovan Bennett. It's going with a double-breasted... Double-breasted.
Add some vowels.
Blessed.
I am blessed. Thank you for asking.
Blessed.
Yeah. I'm blessed. Yeah.
Is that like a flannel? What is that? It's like a. It's a certain fabric.
It's a knit.
There's some texture. A knit.
It does have texture, multiple colors. Which actually, can we do a little education here, kids? Right, like we don't all have Tim McAuliffe long money. We don't. Some of our money is short. So what you got to do is, and if we can just zoom in on, mm-hmm. on the threads here, you got to give yourself options, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got multiple colors, all jewel tones. I've told you before.
Right.
Jewel tones are big. So you could go blue, you could go maroon, you could go two different blues. Duke blue, navy blue, Gonzaga blue. You have options. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling like a little canary yellow today, go ahead with your bad self.
Right.
If you want to wear maroon like McAuliffe, mm-hmm. go ahead. That's you. One blazer, multiple looks. That's how, kids, you ball on a budget until
you stretch your dollar.
You're Tim McAuliffe and you get that long money. But
long money.
Guys like me and Jesse, mm-hmm. we got to make it last, baby. Yeah. We got to make it last.
I understand. Okay, so I just want to know how you determine long money.
Do you have a pool in your backyard?
Long money is a pool in your backyard.
I do
have a pool.
Do you have
By the way, the story behind the pool.
Can you watch TV outside at your house?
Now
inside
that's
TV
easy.
Or outside?
I've told Jesse before.
Do you have speed bumps in your neighborhood?
No, no speed. Speed bumps is a great. That is, that's and I live between
speed
two
bumps
schools.
And roundabouts are the yeah. things.
Yeah, if you live in a rich neighborhood in Toronto, they'll put speed bumps in for you. If you live in the hood and there's 40,000 people in a closed area, there's not going to be speed bumps there.
True, true. Say
it is. It is a wonderful distinguishing factor. Have you seen the pictures of what's going on in Texas right now? Because I knew what was going to happen for this Jays-Rangers game and the home opener for Texas. I read all of the stories. I knew what they were doing. And until I saw the pictures, I don't think it hit home. Now, they're the three people with the masks. No one else. Is anyone else just kind of sort of shocked by this, or is it just me?
Hey, man. Texas and Florida. They play by different rules. I think we've learned that in life. We certainly learned that in the pandemic. The thing that really got me as I read through the, game day protocols that they're having,
yeah,
is, you have to wear a mask unless you are eating or drinking. I don't know. When I go to a ball game, what do?
Eat and drink.
I eat and drink. So, why are we pretending? This is not safe. But you're making money, and you're in a state where you have politicized said virus and wearing masks. So just do you, Texas, and then your ICUs will deal with it at some point, sadly.
And that's how the United States deals with a lot of things. So it's not like we're breaking news here. Toronto leading 4-1. Matt's in a little bit of a pickle here, but he gets a line out to end the inning. So we head to the top of the fifth, the Toronto Blue Jays leading 4-1. My co-host is Donovan Bennett.
Don't you have a radio ad read to do?
And the top of the fifth is brought to you by St. Louis Bar and Grill. All right. Let's talk about a column that you put up on, and this is the most awkward to go from that voice to where we're going to go
next. Why don't you do it in that voice?
Because I don't feel like it's fitting, but I'm going to go anyway. Right now on sportsnet.ca, you can read DJ's latest story. And I think it's an important conversation. It's on the NBA's response to Kevin Durant using homophobic and misogynistic language in a social media exchange with actor Michael Rapaport and Durant's non-apology. We will tweet out the column for those who missed it. Now, the NBA fined Durant $50,000. Donovan, was this a missed opportunity for a league that prides itself on forward thinking?
Yeah, you mean you got to keep that same energy, right? So you are the social justice league. And to be clear, I'm not about whataboutism, so just keeping score. Hey, you did this for this group. You have to do this for that group. What they've done, the NBA, in terms of having conversation about anti-black racism has been amazing, and I applaud them for it. However, that doesn't mean they don't have room to grow. And what I don't understand is that Myers Leonard is in basically a witness protection program right now. He was basically jettisoned from his team, the Miami Heat, after, while playing a video game, using an anti-Semitic remark, which he claims he didn't know what it meant. I'm not sure if that makes it better or worse. Just so happens that many people in the league office happen to be Jewish. His owner happens to be Jewish. He had to go into counseling and learn and do multiple press conferences. He has since been removed from the team, was moved to the Thunder. He's since been waived. So no one's talking about Myers Leonard. Kevin Durant has a long thread of reprehensible comments in his DM exchange with Rappaport. And should Rappaport have put it on blast and made it public when it's a private thing? Probably not. But the fact is, you shouldn't have used that language, whether it's private or public. He has a presser. He says he's sorry for that language being public. And then he's looking to get back on the court. He addressed his hamstring injury longer than he did what he said to a community that, by the way, that in June, when the Nets are playing for a championship and Durant's probably still playing, the Nets are going to tweet out a pride message about equality. The league certainly is. And when we've been able to congregate for pride parades, there have been NBA officials in that space. So you just have to keep the same energy. If you want your sport to be inclusive for all, and if you look at the LGBTQ2S+ community as someone that you want to be not only part of your consumers, but part of your league, then you have to say $50K, which is the max amount you could give for a fine in this instance, that's not enough.
They took the easy way out, right? Like, they looked at Myers Leonard and said, this is what the NBA handed down.
Yes.
$50K, and this is what we're going to do with Kevin Durant. But if you look in the past,
Rajon Rondo was suspended a game for a homophobic slur.
Yes.
And Kobe Bryant in the past was fined double this amount for it. Now the CBA has changed. But for me, it's always about just be better. No one's asking you to completely change everything that you do. But if you're just better every time, then the level steps up. I think it was Plato who said, never hate on a man. It's not the exact phrasing, obviously, because I don't think Plato said never hate on a man. who shows continual improvement, no matter how slow, right?
I think it was Plato who said, don't watch me, dog. Don't watch me.
I'll get the real one now that I'm embarrassed completely that I got it. Don't hate on a man. Don't criticize a man.
While you're Googling
Plato. Did I throw you off?
Just a little bit. Yeah. I was trying to think, can I come with some Socrates? But it would have been hip-hop Socrates and not
Socrates, philosophies, and hypotheses.
Correct. You mentioned point, being better. To me, it's about having a plan. Like, how are you going to be better? And in terms of the organization, which said they spoke to Kevin Durant but wouldn't disclose what that conversation was about or if there were any other greater consequences, or Durant, who hasn't, one, apologized to the community that he offended, apologized to everyone because you don't have to be from that group. If you are an ally, you're an ally in all things to be offended. Two, he hasn't explained why that language was problematic. And three, the league really hasn't addressed how is this going to be a deterrent. We're just going to fine everyone $50,000, which literally means nothing to Kevin Durant. Or are we going to try and do something so that people have an understanding? We could take this mess and make it a message. Because here's the most important thing. If you are a 10-day contract on the Nets, mm-hmm. and you happen to be gay, do you feel comfortable coming out in that locker room given what was said by the star of your team and the non-reaction by media, by the league itself, by other players?
Yeah.
And so, again, if Tyler Hero was going back and forth with Kevin Hart in his DMs, Tyler Hero used language that's often used in a locker room. Doesn't mean it's okay, but it was racially insensitive to Kevin Hart. And Kevin Hart made it public. Is Tyler Hero playing the next day? Right. I don't think he is.
No, I don't think so either. And that's to keep the same energy.
Yes.
Like if you're going to say that you're an inclusive league working towards making things better for everybody and bringing everyone into the fold, then do that for everybody.
Correct.
And that's where the keep the same energy comes from. Never discourage anyone who continually makes progress, no matter how slow.
AKA, don't watch me, dog. don't hate on me.
Don't hate on
said Plato.
Don't hate on said Plato. And it's not like the other thing that I just, it's not a whole, I hate when people say, well, canceling or cancel culture. That's not what this is. It's just about getting better, being better, and taking steps forward as a society. That's all it's about.
Yeah, there's nuance to life, right? And there's levels to this. And so if Donald Sterling shows over two decades that he has a long track record of doing racially insensitive things, and he owns a team, and his business is put out on Front Street because he's taped by his mistress, who also was wearing visors way before everyone else was wearing visors. Like, maybe she was ahead of the curve. But that's another conversation for another day. Yes. V. Stiviano, I believe was her name. Yeah. If Sterling has to lose his team, am I saying Kevin Durant has to lose his ability to play basketball? No. But should Kevin Durant have to, one, think, and then articulate why what he did was problematic? I don't think that's a tough thing to ask
or
for.
Or be held accountable.
Correct.
Like, and I don't know if he was held accountable or showed any sort of compassion for what he did wrong.
One line in a press conference, no follow-ups, nothing to see here is not being held accountable.
It's funny. We were talking about upstairs before we did this show. We were talking about a lot of the stuff that you and I have been talking about off air. Mm-hmm. And one of those things was the NCAA tournament. And it's been a wonderful tournament. Both sides, men's and women's. The record ratings on the women's side are really intriguing given the way it started. And in my opening monologue or opening segment, I said, shout out to the woman who started off with this ridiculous story about a weight room or a stack of weights and ended with record ratings and some real intrigue, some real drama, some real record ratings. And despite that, there's still inequities within the game, and Paige Beckers is one of the people who is bringing light to this. So even when we're making these steps, we're still missing a lot of the inequities, that same energy that you're talking about.
100%. And maybe I should just, like, name the segment when I come on, like, this has me cheesed. Because this has me cheesed. I am fired up about this specifically because we had conversation and the TikTok went viral in terms of the discrepancy in the weight room and, you know, the grab bags that men and women got. But I'm like, is no one noticing the fact that Paige Bueckers, who just won Player of the Year and was great throughout the tournament, first freshman to do it, has to go back to UConn? Like, she can't then get up the same way her friend from Minnesota, Jalen Suggs, she can't ride that wave and become a professional. And that's not an NCAA rule. Let's be clear. That's a WNBA slash, because they're partners, NBA rule. That's a pro decision that she has to continue to stay in college. Why? Like what is this rule for, that if you're male and you dominate as a teenager in your first year, you can go pro and make money. But if you're female, for some reason, you have to stay in school. Now, you can make the argument that her likeness is going to go up. Maybe, you know, she's going to be able to make more money of building that brand over a couple years, like Sabrina Ionescu. Yeah, that's possible. Or she could be like Cheryl Miller and have a catastrophic injury and never reach her potential as a pro player. So ultimately, if we talk about, in our society, women's right to choose on a lot of things. Paige Bueckers should have the right to choose whether or not she wants to become pro or go overseas in Europe or play in the WNBA or go back to UConn, which would be a great experience. And specifically when you become pro, you're not making the millions that you are as a male athlete. She should be able to start making that money as soon as possible. And some of these females are having the life balance conversation of, well, when am I going to bear a child?
Right.
Is it going to be post-career? Is it going to be during my career? Again, something that males don't have to think about. So she should have more flexibility on how she goes
she
after
should
career.
Be the same.
Correct.
Like, it makes no sense. Yes. If you're a man playing in the NCAA, you can leave after a year. If you're a woman, I'm pretty sure that you can go to Europe, right, after a year, but you can't go to the WNBA.
Correct. Yes.
After a year, which is absolutely ridiculous, even though if she declared right now, she would be a top pick in the WNBA draft.
Yeah.
Let me give you a silver lining.
Oh, okay.
If name and likeness is available to Paige Bueckers as a UConn player next year, if they don't change this, they could change this tomorrow because it seems so ridiculous. She could make a lot of money at UConn, given the power of that program and how good she is.
True. But she could also make money off of her Instagram playing for the New York Liberty or the Washington Mystics.
Could.
But ultimately, I think the point is that choice should be hers. She should be able to figure out what makes the most sense. Do I want to go back to school like Matt Leinart? Or do I want to get out of college and I want to become a pro and make money right now?
Agreed. But you know as well as I do that UConn program could offer her more in name cachet for her name and likeness than the Washington Mystics could.
Yeah, true. True.
And if that goes through, then maybe we'll see her actually benefit from this rule as opposed to be hindered by it.
Which would be a nice takeaway, because I actually do think the value of an education is an important thing.
Yeah.
And it would be great for her to set an example and stay in school. But it should be her choice.
Yeah, it should be her choice without a doubt. And it still might be.
Yep.
She might just leave and say, screw the WNBA, I'll play in Australia.
Right.
Which a lot of people do. All right. Would you stick around? We'll do a little cut or uncut instead of arguing here.
Yeah, I
don't know if we were.
I'm penalty killing, just trying to stay away from my young son for as long as possible. Can I stay until the end of the show? What show's next?
Is he beating you up right now?
Yes, a little bit.
All right, Gunner Uncut, Jesse Rubinoff, digital team. Next, right here on Tim and Friends. Like, what's he doing these days?
The most.
Welcome back to Tim and Friends, going head-to-head with the Toronto Blue Jays game. They are through five in commercial break right now, so you don't need to flip. 4-1 Jays, Steven Matz looking pretty good in his first start.
Light work.
As a member of the Blue Jays. Didn't exactly go as swimmingly in his first few starts with the New York Jets. Sam Darnold, some breaking news today, has been traded to the Carolina Panthers for a 2021 sixth-round pick and second and fourth-round picks in 2022. So, again, this breaking in the last couple hours, Sam Darnold of the Jets has been traded to the Panthers for a sixth-round pick, a second-round pick, and a fourth-round pick. Your reaction to this, other than the Jets are picking a quarterback?
So my initial reaction is that was a segue. Like, that's why you make the long money, is because I was like, where is he going with this? Oh, right. Yeah, we're talking about Sam Darnold.
Don't worry. That was beautiful. I also did Play-Doh earlier
right,
today.
You did. You
and
did.
Was very red in the face.
You did. But you were well-read, is what we learned. My reaction is I think this is, like, you know, good for both sides. The Jets clearly are going to take a quarterback at the top of the draft. They could get a fresh start with a new regime. But, like, can we give Sam Darnold a little bit of time? Let's do a little call and response. Let's okay. go to church. The last MVP in the NFL was whom?
Patrick Mahomes.
Aaron
Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah. Did he sit when he was drafted?
Yes.
The MVP before that.
Patrick Mahomes. He sat.
Lamar Jackson. Did he sit?
Lamar Jackson sat.
Yeah. MVP before that. Tom Brady. Did he sit?
Sat. Yeah.
So what have we learned? Oh. That a quarterback, Preach. I don't know, needs to be put in a position to succeed. Preach. Maybe sit a little bit. Three of the guys you mentioned have Super Bowl rings. Sam Darnold, I'll have you know, is younger than Joe Burrow. Still, to this day, he was thrown in the fire in New York with Adam Gase as the guy who was supposed to save him. So I'm just saying, if he goes to Carolina with Joe Brady, who took Joe Burrow at LSU, made him a star, after Joe Burrow couldn't play in front of Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State,
right.
If Joe Brady did the same with a young Sam Darnold, then yeah, this is a second lease on life for a guy who is talented. Wasn't the only problem they had in New York, probably wasn't the biggest problem, but was not put in a position to succeed. So we've seen this with Ryan Tannehill. What you learned is that if Adam Gase is your coordinator, unless you're Peyton Manning, you're going to suck. And if Joe Burrow is your coordinator, you're probably going to be okay. But what we've really learned is, like, guys need some time. Like, as a young person in any profession, you don't get it 20, 21, 22. And in this profession, oh, yeah, you're supposed to be the CEO of the football team.
Even if your team sucks.
Yeah.
It makes no sense whatsoever, and it's so funny to me, like, why you wouldn't then put – this is twofold, because now the Jets are going to bring in another quarterback, hand them the keys to the Beamer, and do the exact same thing with this guy, hoping that it'll go different.
Sima. Who's got the keys to the Beamer? Yeah. It's funny.
Who am I?
Clearly the girl, them sugar. Mm-hmm. It's funny because we're going to see this all throughout the draft. Like, we might have four,
no, we're doing
five.
It at the top of every draft for the next 15 years.
But this year's crazy, though, right? Like,
we're talking maybe the top four picks. Maybe the top four picks in order, 1, 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks.
But also quarterbacks who are probably going to be asked to play
right away.
Right away.
Yeah.
So, like, Mac Jones, evidently, like, he's the guy rising in draft boards.
For a second, I thought you said Matt Jones, and I was like, wait a second, that's a few years ago. Got it, good. Mac Jones.
Mac Jones. Yeah. Mac Daddy Alabama. Jones. There's two quarterbacks he couldn't get ahead of at Alabama. They're now in the NFL, and we'll see how they are. But, like, all of a sudden, Mac Jones, who couldn't play in front of those guys, he's going to start day one and lead your franchise, and people are trading assets for that to be the case. Sports is so copycat. Life is copycat, but sports specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Why is nobody looking at, okay, these guys that are successful, that are winning MVPs and Super Bowls, why don't we do what the franchises did with them?
Right. It makes no sense. And I've been saying that ad nauseum on this show as much as I can. Like, have we not looked at the greatest quarterbacks of all time and said, wait a second, they're not first overall picks. Peyton Manning is the one. The rest of them are third round picks, second round picks, sixth round picks, like Tom Brady.
Yes.
But you put them in the position to succeed.
Zach Wilson at BYU. Steve Young went to BYU. It's the same thing. No, Steve Young sat behind a great player. Yeah. That's why he was great.
And started immediately and wasn't very good in another league.
Correct.
So give it some time. Give it a good coach. All right. We're going to do a little bit of cut or uncut. I've just been told Vladimir Guerrero took a ball to the hand. Oof. Looks like he's okay. So stayed in the game. He took the ball off of the hand. If you want to watch this game, it's on Sportsnet right now. There are currently two men on. Actually, it's now a 5-1 game, but there are currently two men on for the Jays. So I just want to pass that along to you and say that we would get you the viz, but we got you the viz right away. And there is Vladimir Guerrero getting hit on the hand. Looks like he's okay. He's still in the game. We will give you updates as we can. Meanwhile, we're going to do some cut or uncut with Jesse Rubino.
Let's do it. I'll give you guys a topic. You tell me if it's cut, meaning we don't like it, or uncut, meaning it's cool. And Deej is in here, gave us a whole lesson on his blazer. Why don't we start with a little fashion, okay? Zion Williamson, he's got a multi-year deal with Jordan Brand. And we got our first look at his first signature shoe. It's called the Jordan Z Code, or Z Code, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Lots going on here. Are these kicks cut or uncut?
Start with this?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're the fashion maven of the group since you've already given out the... I think you should go first in this one.
I mean, they're cut. I mean, I mentioned my young son Desmond, who's an artist. He looked like he drew these shoes. Like, I know I said you got to be able to match with everything with your outfit, but not the entire rainbow.
He's going for a key demographic.
Blind?
They're kids.
What's the demographic?
It's kids. It's like it's like the Russell Westbrooks, right? The why nots?
Yeah.
Like my kid got them.
I'll tell you why not.
Because
they're not
because they're
looking.
Ugly.
That's why. Yeah. Open and shut case, Russell.
I'm telling the Kyries are hot too with all the kids because they got so many different colors in them. Have you not seen
but
this?
You guys, like,
I know you're not rocking them.
Get a suit, get a taper up. You want something clean that you could dress up with the suit. Like that's why we have different colorways so we can give you different color options. We don't need the entire colorway in one shoe.
Should have asked you before he released them.
Should have.
Have you given a cut or uncut yet?
I'm just going to say it's uncut.
Uncut.
Because they're not selling them to Donovan. They're selling them to kids.
I guarantee you.
You want to call my kid right now? He's 10. He'll say he likes them.
Call him. I would question your parenting if your kid likes them.
You would question my parenting. All right, we'll do it later.
All right, let's move on. The OKC Thunder have decided to use the rest of the season to evaluate younger players,
in other words, tank.
So they shut down Al Horford. He's 34 years of age. The Thunder were playing the Suns, and the Phoenix broadcast listed the Thunder inactives and gave Horford the designation of old. This isn't the first time this has happened. Back in the day, the Spurs listed Tim Duncan as old when he was sitting out a game, but is it cut or uncut for a broadcast to list an opposing player as old? It's insulting.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask about the tanking, whether or not.
Whatever that term was that you used for the tanking. Tanking's uncut. They want to draft it.
Consciously uncoupling term that you used for the tanking. By the way, Banner Health is getting their money's worth that advertising.
Yeah, without a doubt.
There's a lot of people on that list every single day. I'm going to say that's cut. That's ageist is what it is.
It's only 34. It's not like he's like 40.
I think it's a joke. I don't think they're serious about the old. Like, I think it's a tongue-in-cheek old.
We'll let Al Horford decide if he thinks it's a joke. I'm just saying, in any other industry, Al Horford is a spry young man. And actually, if he was on a title contender, it probably would give you some
value.
Do
you think this is serious? I think that if you tank and you want to sit guys in order to get a better draft pick, then the opposing broadcast can do whatever the bleep they want because you just ruined the game.
Sure, but Al Horford is friendly fire. It's not his fault.
Not only that.
Put tank as the reason. Don't put old.
Okay, I'm with you. Put tank.
They're going to try tank. And move him. What if he wants to go to the Phoenix Suns? Is that in the back of his mind? The broadcast made fun of me. I don't know.
True.
Just saying. Okay, last one.
Are we all that sensitive these
maybe,
days?
Maybe it's 2021. Yeah.
It's not like Chris Paul was born yesterday.
The finish to Gonzaga UCLA was unreal, obviously. Whether you bet on the game or not, lots of great video surfacing after the game showing some early celebrations. Take a look at this one in particular. So the guy leaves the room to play to the camera, fist pump, and then comes back just in time for Suggs to win it. So I ask, cut or uncut, playing to the camera with 3.3 seconds still to go in the game, celebrating as if you already won the bet.
Well, when the video is showing two people lying on the ground, it's telling you if it's cut or it's uncut. It's entirely cut. One, who's filming this? Like, can we not just enjoy life? Do we have to film everything? Although, she has a great manager. It's cut. It was cut.
The whole thing is cut. Like, if you don't realize the situation, too, like, you're celebrating
with 3.3 left.
Yeah. Like, hold on. You've never watched a game. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for Cut or Uncut. We're done.
I can't stay?
You can stay if you want. Want to talk to Dave Smart?
Sure. I love Dave Smart.
He's coming up now. We're going to do a little hockey.
I pocket dialed him by accident like a couple months ago. Felt bad. That was the only reason I reached out.
Did he call you back?
Yeah. And that's why.
Tim and Friends. Time for Tim and Friends. And now, time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs Hour number two of this Monday edition of Tim and Friends coming your way. Still to come, Raptors and NCAA tournament talk with Canadian hoops legend Dave Smart. Plus, we hit the rinks in Montreal and Calgary. Habs and Oilers from Montreal. Leafs and Flames regionally on Sportsnet West tonight. Hockey Central is coming up on Sportsnet West at 4:30 Mountain Time. Meantime, Jays in action this afternoon, which is why we're not on Sportsnet right now. Facing the Texas Rangers in their home opener in Arlington, it was Steven Matz versus Mike Foltynewicz. That was your pitching matchup, with the Jays trying to improve on a great start in the Bronx. Could they be 3-1? Well, how about this? Globe Life Field, full capacity for the Rangers home opener. Just over 40,000 in attendance for this one. Top of the first, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with two on. Bloop single extends his hit streak to four games. They've played four games, 1-0 early. Matt's looking good. Freezes David Dalton, the freezes with the fastball. Then Joey Gallo goes down looking on the heater as well. Top two, Marcus Semien. Got 99 problems, but this pitch ain't one. 424 feet, 2-1 blast. It was 2-0. Next batter, Kevin Biggio. Back-to-back home runs. 4-0 Jays. Top six, scary moment for every Jays fan out there. Guerrero, who has a hit, as mentioned, in every game thus far. Hit on the hand by a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Looked to be in pain. Trainers got a good look at it. He would stay in the game for now. It's 5-1 if you want to flip over. I forgive you. If not, I got you covered. 5-1, Jays leading, bottom six. Got it good, and since you understood, Twins and Tigers from Detroit. Top two, bases loaded for Nelson Cruz. Second pitch of the at-bat. That's a four-run shot, otherwise known as a salami. Wait a second. He thinks it's fair. Replay says foul.
So Nelson Cruz lights this one up. On a line to left. One pitch later. A grand slam for Nelson Cruz. Oh, baseball karma comes to his rescue.
So one pitch after he thought he had a grand slam, he gets the grand slam. 10th career salami, 6-0. Top five, Cruz back at it. This one's a solo blast, and no doubt about that one. 5 RBI on the day as the Tigers improve, or excuse me, the Twins improve to 3-1 with a 15-2-6 win. All right, as mentioned, Hockey Central coming up on Sportsnet West at 4:30 local time in Calgary, followed by the Oilers and Canadians. That's also in Edmonton, if you don't know. It's Mountain Time. Got it good, and since you understood. Oilers coming off a win Friday in the Battle of Alberta. Have only lost once in regulation in their past seven. That was against Montreal last week. With more on tonight's game, let's send it to Eric Engels in Montreal. Oh, Eric, take it away.
Well, first of all, I'm feeling very comfortable. I've got Deanne to my right. I've got my cameraman, Hugo, in front of me. And they're going to make Eric Staal very comfortable in his Canadiens debut. He's playing with Canadiens' leading assist man, Jonathan Drouin, and Tyler Toffoli, their leading goal scorer. Carey Price in nets behind Staal. And the Canadiens are going to play against Mike Smith, the only Edmonton goaler to get a win against the Canadiens this year. The other three games, the Canadiens won against Mikko Koskinen.
Eric, it's interesting. I know that you professionally think that Carey Price is among the best goaltenders in the world. Did Deanne Bibeau just add a little whistle on her organ grinding right there? Was there a little...
Definitely.
Right. I was distracted by it. I apologize.
Much appreciated, too. It's all good.
All right. So Carey Price, obviously, is a really good goaltender. And Carey Price has had his ups and downs this year. Are the Montreal Canadiens set that he can be the guy to carry them in the postseason?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They saw what he could do last year in the bubble. Yes, it's been a bit inconsistent this year. It's why they made a goaltending coach change with Sean Burke coming in for Stefan Waite. But Carey Price is going to be able to handle the load, and it's going to be a heavy one from here to the end of the season. They've got 22 games to play and 37 nights starting tonight, and that's going to be tough. But he's got a good parachute behind him in Jake Allen. So I don't think the Canadians are worried about Carey Price at all, but they'd like to see a more consistent effort from him moving forward.
They've been able to do a really good job with the Edmonton Oilers. Why has that been?
You know what? The key is obviously shutting down Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, and the Canadians have done a great job of that as a five-man unit. Great pressure up the ice with forwards like Arturi Lehkonen and Paul Byron, who will get that assignment tonight for a lot of it. McDavid and Draisaitl are playing on different lines. Shea Weber, Jeff Petrie on the back end. Obviously, they're missing Ben Chiarot, but Joel Edmondson has been excellent for them. So they feel like they can handle them as a team, and that's kind of the key to beating the Oilers, as we've seen over the years.
Eric, as always, thanks for doing this. And can you thank Deanne for me as well?
Sure. And I'll give you a Masters pick also, since we're on here.
Oh, doctor. Coming strong with the Masters pick. Let's go.
I think Dustin Johnson is going to repeat. I know people are excited about Spieth and everything, but until he could hit the fairway, I don't like his chances at Augusta.
All right. There is the Masters pick from our friend, Mr. Angles. Always appreciate it. Got it down. Dustin Johnson. We'll see if Spieth can do anything. Although the confidence may go a long way, Eric. All right, Leafs and Flames will follow the Oilers and Canadiens regionally on Sportsnet West tonight. You can also see it on Sportsnet Flames, just in case the first game goes a little long. Flames fell to 2-4-1 against the Leafs this season after a 4-2 loss last night. They go back at it again this evening. It'll be Jack Campbell getting the start for the Leafs, while Jacob Markstrom returns for the Flames. With more on this one, another must win for the Calgary Flames. Let's send it to Calgary and Ryan Leslie. Ryan?
Thank you, Tim. Yes, must win indeed, although the chances right now around here anyhow feel awfully thin and slim. But, Daryl Sutter, in talking about the matchup of the Leafs last night, and this first of back-to-backs last night was, he was talking about the fact that he liked the fact that they played with some pace against the Leafs' better players, but only for moments. That you didn't see another complete 60-game effort. That seems to continue to be a theme anyhow as far as this season goes and the Calgary Flames. And speaking of Daryl Sutter, more pointed, strong words about the group that he coaches now, and saying that with a lot of these players, okay has been the benchmark, and we need them to be playing better than okay. Probably not wrong, but when you think about the fact that they're 5-9-1 since Sutter took over, you have to think that there's a little bit of work that everybody needs to be doing a little bit better, and certainly it doesn't sound as though there's going to be any changes for Daryl Sutter's lineup tonight against the Leafs. There could be some tweaking, but at this point, nothing major. And with a trade deadline looming, all kinds of questions, no answers at this point. And one programming note, we find out today that it is the Oilers going to be here now on Saturday instead of Vancouver. Oilers and Flames on Saturday night.
All right, another Battle of Alberta set for Saturday night. I got to ask, though, when that goal went in off of the skate of Hanifin, off of the stick of John Tavares, it felt like the energy just drained, and understandably so for a little bit, but Calgary had no response after that. For a Daryl Sutter coach team, that's got to be deflating, because the one thing that he always wants is the big response to the tough moment.
Yeah, and third periods have been a problem. We've seen this the last number of games where, and we recently saw it in the Battle of Alberta in the last meeting, where, you know, the Flames are hanging around, playing a pretty solid game, but not a 60-minute game to which Daryl is demanding from them. So we will see if you get that tonight. Is it too little too late? Likely. But this is one of those situations where just when you think this team can kind of get back in it, with the schedule or with their own play, whatever it is, something will happen to kind of deflate and take the wind out of their sails. It's a familiar theme. It's a frustrating theme to the fan base here. And certainly, you know, there is a lot to evaluate with the remaining games this season. Again, we mentioned the deadline and then into the offseason. There is a lot of talk and a lot of frustration here. We'll see what it amounts to. But a win against Toronto is never a bad thing if you're the Calgary Flames. And you mentioned the goaltending earlier. But this has got to be a night where they not only contain the Toronto Maple Leafs' better players, but Calgary themselves, you know, all of their better players, Tim, their numbers are way down. It's one thing to buy into a defensive system, for sure, and then hopefully get results. But if you're not getting the results and these star players aren't playing the way they're accustomed to, you got some problems.
Without a doubt. Reporter, co-host, Ron McLean impersonator, Ryan Leslie, we always thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is an interesting one for Calgary because they're all must wins and it feels like it's almost done. If there weren't the five games against Montreal, we would probably say it's done. And I got a feeling that if it doesn't get done and it is indeed over, this might be Johnny Gaudreau's last season in Calgary. All right. The other game in the North sees the Sens visit the Jets. Ottawa coming in off of a win in Montreal on Hockey Night in Canada. Well, the Jets have been off since Friday's shootout loss to the Leafs. Of course, all eyes in Winnipeg are on Kevin Cheveldayoff as the Jets look to bolster their D-core. We're exactly 1 week away from the NHL trade deadline. So an interesting one there. And I'm going to give my next guest a proper Tim McAuliffe intro, knowing full well I wouldn't get one back the other way. Either way, this is how I was raised. My next guest might be the greatest college coach this country has ever seen and gives John Wooden a run for his money. The program he built at Carleton University has won 15 of the last 18 national championships, remarkable in of itself. Even more remarkable when you consider that school had never won a national title in any sport before he got there. Not sure he's not in the NBA, but who am I? Just a guy who studied this ish for 25 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the former head coach of the Carleton men's basketball program and my personal arch nemesis, Dave Smart. Hey, Dave. Welcome to Tim and Friends.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Can I call you a friend?
I'd say Tim and acquaintances today.
All right.
Like generally, like Donovan and I, when he calls me, I call him back.
Right.
When I call him, he calls me back.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I get it. I mean, you, I get about the same response I get from Patino when I call him. It's about the same with McAuliffe, but acquaintances. I mean, we know each other.
Okay.
We say hi.
Yeah. You know, James Derwin calls me back every once in a while. All right. He's the head coach of Ottawa, for those who don't know. 2 years since leaving your post as head coach at Carleton. Is coaching your son's hockey itching or scratching the itch enough for you right now?
I mean, I miss coaching. I miss coaching a lot. I don't regret my decision because being with my kids and coaching both my kids in basketball and hockey, the time I spent with the Sens, but especially the time coaching the kids and being at everything they have had, unfortunately, with COVID, not as much as it would normally be. But I certainly don't regret it in any way, but I do miss the coaching. It's funny. It's like, do you regret your decision? Nope. Yeah. But do you miss the coaching? Definitely. Without question.
Not I'd mutually like exclusive. Back. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Right.
Tell me there's a different tack to Dave Smart, U12 or whatever it is, hockey coach than Carleton head coach, please.
I mean, you know, the words are different and the tone's different a little bit, but you know, same message. They're rewarded when they play hard and you know, you got to just tell people the truth. I feel like the kids are great. They all like it's double A, triple A hockey. I mean, we don't have triple A in Ottawa, but so it's the highest level. So these kids they're playing competitive at the highest level they can play at, and they want to be good. So they understand, you know, and they want to be pushed. So it's been great. I've enjoyed it. And the hockey like coaching the hockey is a different animal for me. And I mean, that's been fun too. The basketball's a little different at that age, just because, like, and for me, because I don't want to put too much pressure on them and really hockey's kind of their main sport right now. The youngest kind of is basketball a little bit, but hockey's both their main sports right now. So I kind of a little more easygoing with the basketball stuff, although I'm sure they wouldn't say so. It's funny because I'm working with the Sens a bit, and I talk to Brady all the time about, you know, you do have a Hall of Fame dad that you could probably touch base with, and I talk to him about the fact that, like, if you want to commiserate over a really annoying and tough to please dad, you could talk to my 11-8-year-old. I'm sure they can relate.
So I was telling folks earlier in the show that you're doing work with the Sens, the pesky Sens. So it's not just a hockey coach of your U12 team. You're also doing work with the Sens. Like, how is it, or what is it, and how's it going?
I mean, it's going great, and I love it. I mean, I just think DJ Smith's been great to work with. I mean, I like how he sees things. I like how he does things. I don't know. I mean, this might get him fired in the spot, but we think a lot alike. So, I've really enjoyed working with him, and my roles increased sort of daily, monthly, whatever, with them in the last year and a half. And what I do, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it changes. I talk to him quite a bit. I work with a number of the players in terms of trying to help them out in terms of leadership, in terms of the room. And, you know, I mean, I'm just a dumb basketball coach, so that who really has no connections, and you know, a lot of the guys trust me, and I don't pass on a lot of the things they say directly to the coaches, but I certainly give my input, and the guys have been great. I mean, talking to the players, it's I mean, for me, it's perfect, because a lot of these guys are the same age as most of the guys I've coached for 30 years. So,
right.
You know, personality wise and where they are in life is very similar. Now they're in the NHL and they're not in college, but they're the same age. And like I said, DJ has just done such a wonderful job sort of being patient with the group, and they're playing really, I mean, they're playing really well. They're a long way away from where they want to be. I mean, they're probably a year and a half away from being really, really tough, but they're going in the right direction. The room's great, and they compete most nights. It's just fun to be around. It's fun to be part of. And, you know, I've been lucky because they've listened to my opinion, and DJ and I talk an awful lot about the room and about culture and about leadership and what they need.
That's an interesting one because we're going to talk Raptors and we're going to talk NCAA tournament, but the balance of letting kids grow and having to win is an interesting one in Ottawa. Is that kind of what they're trying to figure out?
Well, I mean, I hope so. I work with the players. I work with DJ. I mean, again, if you know what you're doing from a leadership standpoint at the top, you give people an opportunity to grow with the team. And when someone's doing the job that DJ is doing in terms of, I mean, it's, if you're there every day, it's clear that the room is in a good place. Obviously there's some negatives.
You can tell by the way they fight. No, you can tell by the way that team fights that they're I completely agree with you on the job that he's doing.
It's incredible. I mean, it's not perfect. You always have some situations. You better have some situations because people want to play more than they're playing. But he's done an unbelievable job. And as long as the people up top understand that you let the team grow with the people who are doing a great job, there's a trust being built. And if I just find with pro sport, the good organizations have patience and they deal with it in terms of what they look like in terms of the room, in terms of the fight, in terms of the culture, and they let the room grow with the coach. And if they don't, then yes, you know, a couple of people will be happy if the coach gets let's go. But, you know, there's half the room's not happy. And I feel like they make, not Ottawa per se, but maybe Ottawa, but certainly most average to bad pro organizations, they make too many decisions too fast.
Yeah, and knee-jerk reactions, you know, yeah. I agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and they kill their room. They absolutely, and Ottawa's got a good thing going. I mean, I you know, I'm not a hockey guy, and I don't profess to be a hockey guy. But I'm not getting paid enough to be around if I didn't think they had a good thing. I, you know, like I've got other things going. I've got my own job at Carlton. I've got my kids. If I didn't think they had a good thing going in terms of their culture and the way they were operating, I mean, I wouldn't be around for a second year. They've got a really good thing going, and I hope they're smart enough to realize that and run with it.
All right, I like your haircut. We got to take a break. When we come back, I think there's some crossover here between the Raptors culture and the culture that you're talking about, because Nick Nurse and company have been able to bring that to the room. Is it in danger with the losing that they're doing right now? We'll discuss that with Dave Smart, former head coach at Carlton, next right here on Tim and Friends. Tim and Friends, the Friends, Dave Smart. The Raptors back in action tonight against the Wizards. You can see it on Sportsnet East, Ontario, Pacific, and Sportsnet 1. Raptors got just their second win in the last 15 games Friday by absolutely dominating the Warriors, 130-77. The 53-point margin of victory was the biggest in the NBA this season and in Raptors franchise history. Their largest lead, 61 points, which was the largest lead in an NBA game since 2018, and just the third time in the last 25 years that a lead has been higher than 60 points. They set a franchise record for points in the third quarter with 46. Gary Trent Jr. also set a franchise record with a plus 54 rating, just three shy of the all-time NBA record. And on his 27th birthday, Pascal Siakam had 36 points in three quarters of play, setting the record for most points scored by a Raptor on his birthday. There was some bad news as Fred VanVleet left in the third quarter with a strained hip flexor, so he's out for tonight's game, meaning Malachi Flynn will make his first career NBA start against Russell Westbrook and the Washington Wizards. Dave, we were talking about culture before the break, and I kept saying going into the NBA deadline that the Raptors have to worry about their culture when they're dealing pieces away. Do you agree with that, or is the culture set from the top down and you don't need to worry about it if you're trading pieces away?
Well, I mean, I think my opinion on it is that, like, it's easier to have great culture if you're winning, obviously. I mean, it's funny because, you know, people talk about culture, and it's great culture if you're winning, and you're not, it's going to be hard to have good culture if you're losing. But the reality is some operations have good culture while they're losing. And I think Toronto, if any, is one of those places. I think from the top down to Nick, everybody does a really good job in having guys do the right thing. Now, you know, is it easy when you're losing? No. And does it look, are there issues when you're losing? Yes. And do the general fan sometimes think it's bigger than it is? I mean, people have to care, but I think their culture is great. But I also do think that when you're winning and you make a lot of moves, people coming into a winning culture tend to
adapt,
make less waves. Yeah. Then you, even if you come into a team that's got great culture, if they're a losing team, they try to change the culture because they assume, because you're losing, right, that they should change it. But I still don't think it's going to happen with the Raptors because I think they have, you know, I think they have great culture. And it's funny, I heard on ESPN, you know, where people talk about, there's no such thing as culture. Culture is good if you're winning. Culture is bad if you're losing. And then there's no such thing as next man up. And I think in the Raptors case, it's there's, I think Van Gundy was saying it. And I disagree with one. I think you can have great culture, even if your team's not winning at the time. If you have strong leaders and you know what your goal is and you know where you're trying to go with things, you can still have great culture if you're losing. I do agree with the whole next man up thing is stupid, especially in basketball. Like, when you lose Van Vliet, the next man up, no disrespect, but he's not Van Vliet. So it's, you're not as good. Like if right. you were as good, that's, you'd be playing him before.
That's what made last season so special, was that they lost Kawhi Leonard and they still set the franchise record for, they didn't replace him with anybody really. And they still were able to set a franchise record for, I guess it wasn't wins in the end. It would have been winning percentage in the end because they didn't play the full season. But the fact that they didn't lose a step in the regular season without Kawhi Leonard, to me, spoke to the culture.
Yeah, it speaks a lot to the culture. And I mean, you lost Kawhi, but you didn't have a ton of injuries and guys, you know, took on their new role and did better. But it's hard to replace guys over and over. And I think that's what you're seeing here. You lose Kawhi, then and over time that cuts into your depth. You lose Ibaka,
more and that, more and more.
You lose more and more and more, and then it cuts into your depth. And the next man up thing just doesn't play in most sports. Like there's a difference between who you're putting on the floor. You're going to be worse. But I do think their culture is very good. I mean, from the outside looking in, I'm not there, so I can't say for sure. It's not like I'm in the Sens room, but from what you see.
Understood. All right. We'll discuss whether or not they could make a little run here healthy or not, or if that's just asking too much. All right. Time for a little Hockey Central on Sportsnet West. We will continue on Sportsnet 360 with Dave Smart. We'll continue our chat about the Raptors and a little NCAA tournament talk as Gonzaga and Baylor go toe-to-toe. Can the Zags finish the perfect season? Back in 60 seconds on Sportsnet 360, Hockey Central, Sportsnet West. Back after these. For those just joining us on Tim and Friends, Toronto Blue Jays and Texas Rangers playing in the Rangers home opener in front of a sold-out Globe Life Stadium lead 6-1 in the top of the eighth inning. Alejandro Kirk is currently at the plate after Steven Matz went 6 1/3 of two-hit ball with 9 Ks and 1 walk. So the great start continues for the Toronto Blue Jays, as right now they lead the Texas Rangers in the top of the eighth, 6-1. I won't get mad if you flick. I understand. I like baseball, too. If you stick around, Dave Smart is joining me, the head coach or former head coach of the Carlton Ravens, joining me right now. We're talking about the Raptors. I feel like, given where they are and what they are, and obviously getting hit by COVID is going to slow them down, but we saw a glimpse of perhaps them turning a corner. Do you feel like they have a run left in them, or is that asking too much in a season where they're in Tampa, they've been hit by COVID? It just, there's been a lot stacked against them this year.
Yeah, I think it depends what you consider a run. I mean, I think they definitely have a shot to make the playoffs. And you know, I mean, if it depends where they end up. I think that you want to avoid Brooklyn. But I mean, I think if they're
I'm not saying they're beating Brooklyn. I'm just saying, can they make a run where they're in the playoff spot and they're in the picture, maybe in the play-in tournament? That's what I'm talking about, a run.
Right, but if they get that seventh spot, I think Milwaukee, I think Philadelphia are vulnerable. I really do. I don't think they're likely beating them in seven, but right. I think those two teams are vulnerable. I don't think the Nets, they just have too much. You know, I mean, the other thing is, depending how good a run they can make, it's not like fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh are totally out of reach.
No.
It's just that there's too many teams ahead of them. I mean, it's not a case of that they couldn't catch any one of those teams. It's just trying to catch three of them might be a little much, just because when some teams are winning or losing, some other teams are winning. So, but I do think they're good enough to compete with definitely any of the teams four and below, and on an equal level. And then unless Boston get their act together, I mean, they've got some high end talent, but not much depth. I still think an injury here or there with the Bucks and the Sixers allows it to be a possibility, likely.
People forget that after that 2-8 run, like when the Raptors went on a run, they beat Milwaukee, they beat Brooklyn, they beat Philadelphia. Like, it's not, it's yeah. The season has been so crazy that it's hard to remember what's transpired. Like, honestly, like, I do it for right. a living, and I it's hard to remember what they've done.
I mean, the Brooklyn stuff's a little, they haven't had their team. Like, yeah. when they have their team, I'm assuming they're going to have everybody for the playoffs. And when they have everybody for the playoffs, there's nobody.
Can they win without defense? Are they that good offensively that they can win without defense?
Well, I think they're playing better defense. I think guys are at least putting an effort out, and I think if they try, they're not going to be great defensively, but they're going to be good enough. And they're so talented and reasonably deep. I just, no one in the East really has enough to play with them. Right. I mean, I like Milwaukee. I really like the addition of Holiday, but they just don't have enough. And again, Brooklyn may not be healthy, but who knows what goes on with Kyrie. But if they've got all those guys playing, I don't see how anybody, especially in the East, can play with.
We're going to get to the NCAA. I'm going to be honest with you, though. I didn't take you as an art guy. I'm glad you're showing off the full repertoire in the house with the art behind you. Like, that's
you like that?
Yeah, you didn't strike me as an art guy. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, I didn't buy it.
All right, what a weekend we got in both men's and women's basketball. The NCAA tournaments have been spectacular. If you missed it, this is just what happened this weekend. It's crazy.
Left, McDonald, 2 seconds, McDonald trapped, heaves, can't hit, that is it! The Stanford Cardinal, national champions!
Mitchell wants another three, and he finds it! What a dominant first half! Campbell, nice pass to Riley! What a play by Suggs! My gosh!
Fantastic! What a pass!
At the other end, Timmy gives the Zags the lead! It's in the paint, floater, short, got it back, ties it with three! Gonzaga has time to do something! Suggs for the win! Oh, yeah! Great games in Final Four history.
When you get Jim Nance's voice to crack, you've had a pretty good game. Gonzaga UCLA goes down to the wire. The Zags emerge victorious. Did you think they were going down as you were watching the end of regulation and overtime, Dave?
No. I still felt like they had a better chance to get stops, and they're just so good offensively. And I mean, I've obviously got a huge bias because I feel like Andrew still is, you know, there's a lot of talent on the floor, but I still feel like Andrew's the smartest and best basketball player, not the best talent, but the best basketball player on the floor. And I still think you know, that three he made was huge. And I've coached him, and I've coached him in a number of situations. When he's your fifth best player, I find it difficult to not feel like they're going to get it done. Even tonight, I mean, the way it went, it looks like Baylor are playing better than Gonzaga, but I think they'll take it to another level.
For those who don't know, Andrew Nebhard is a Canadian who plays for Gonzaga, a very talented Canadian and a transfer from Florida. So you had him with the Canadian national program?
I had him when I was the assistant with that program, and he was great. And then I was the head coach of the U19 team, and I had him there, and he was unbelievable. He's definitely top 5 or 10 players I've ever coached. And I didn't coach him for 5 years. I mean, he's just a special guy. Like I said, he may not be a high end talent, but in terms of physical talent, but he's just so smart, and he's so competitive, and he he just knows how to win. He's won everywhere he's played. And I think he's still their glue. As good as those other guys are on that team, I still think he's their glue.
And when you hear Jalen Suggs, who will be a top pick, who is a guy I like a lot too, when you hear him talk about Andrew Nembhard, you realize just how good he is at making others feel comfortable. Like, those are two point guards, and you would think if you were a kid going into a program where you feel like you're a lottery pick, having another point guard might make you feel uncomfortable. But Suggs is like, I just needed this guy here. Like, this is unbelievable that we have this guy playing on the team.
Tim, when you're 20 years older, you'll still only be half as mature as Andrew is. I'll never be as half as mature as Andrew is. I mean, he's just got a way about him. I mean, I sat with Brad Stevens 2 years ago and I said, look, I don't know where he stacks up as an NBA player. I'm just telling you, he's probably 15 picks better than where he's going to get projected. That's all I'm going to tell you. I don't know if where he stacks up from an NBA level, but wherever you think he is, put him 15 spots higher, and that's where he should be.
So Gonzaga is looking to become the first team to go undefeated since the 1976 Indiana Hoosiers. I know that you got cable put into your igloo so you could watch the Indiana Hoosiers play basketball, but it's so hard to see this actually come to fruition. Four other teams have gone into the tournament undefeated since that 76 Indiana team. None of them have been able to complete it. Do you know how many times you went to our national tournament without a loss against U Sports competition?
I have no idea. I know we came out once. I don't know how many times we went in. By the way, was that a shot at my age or is that a shot at my city? I feel like if it's a shot at my city, you've offended a lot of people.
It was an inside joke between you, me, and maybe three other people about you talking about Indiana basketball to someone from the United States who thought that you would have no idea what Indiana basketball was or who any of these people were. So
Bobby Knight? Who's Bobby Knight?
Who's this Bobby Knight guy? Who's this Bobby Knight character? So you went to our national tournament undefeated three times and you only won once, even though you had won whatever, 15 of the last 18 titles. And let me tell you something. You won national titles with one loss. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You won 10 times with one loss. Does that speak to how hard? Like, did you lose on purpose just so you wouldn't go in with the zero losses?
I mean, we didn't lose on purpose. We lost a few OUA championship games where, you know, we certainly didn't lose on purpose. We tried and we played our guys, but we didn't game plan the same way we would have if we weren't going to nationals and
already
we didn't know that
tournament.
And we were playing a team, usually in the OUA, we were playing a team that there was a good chance we could play them again the week after. And our goal was the national championship, not the OUA championship. And I'm not coach anymore, so the OUA can't get mad at me anymore. Cause whenever I said that, they've gotten really mad at me. But the reality is it wasn't as important to us. And so we certainly tried, but we didn't game plan the same way. We didn't do some of the things that we had planned to do against that OUA team if we played them at nationals. So it was different. And I don't know if that's why we lost, but it might be why it was a little closer than it was if we played them again a week later.
So Gonzaga's past the pressure of the moment, right? Like, if you felt a pressure of having a zero next to your win column, that's gone a national championship, is it not? Like, you don't feel the pressure of that, do you?
No, and I mean, where's the pressure now? I mean, they're in the national final against another team that
really
is unbelievable. I mean, they're the two best teams. They've been the two best teams. They're by far the two best teams. I mean, two of my favorite coaches down there are Calvin Sampson and your best friend Mick Cronin, and he's a friend of mine too. And I love how they coach and I love how their teams play. But I mean, those two teams weren't great. They were incredibly competitive and they played incredibly hard
Tough, yeah.
and they defended really well, but they didn't have a ton of natural talent compared to Baylor and Gonzaga. And you know, Gonzaga, they survived UCLA, but those two teams are by far the best teams. And I mean, people say, well, they took them to overtime. They took them to overtime and they still couldn't beat it. Like they shot 58% and they still couldn't beat them. I mean, they got whatever shot they wanted, which was kind of disappointing from a Gonzaga standpoint. Like I didn't think Gonzaga played very well defensively. I mean, I felt like they let UCLA go wherever they wanted to go. And I think they could have stopped them from getting to those spots because other teams were able to stop them. The other teams just couldn't score enough on a highly competitive, great defensive team, but Gonzaga still was able to score. And I think it'll be different tonight. I think it'll be a really good game. If Gonzaga defend like they did against UCLA, they're losing by 50. They're not playing. They're not winning that game, but I think they will play defend better.
Gonzaga 31-0, Baylor 27-2, and one of those losses came in their second game back after a COVID pause that cost them 3 weeks. They lose to Kansas in their second game back after the three-week pause. They were the top two teams in the preseason polls. They were the top two teams throughout most of the year, and they're the top two teams in KenPom's adjusted efficiency margins. So as we told you at the start, kids, when Ken came on here, these were the two teams that you probably should have had in your final. All right, want to stick around for last call, Dave?
Sure.
That wasn't very enthusiastic.
Well, I mean, it's Tim and acquaintances. It's not, if it was Tim and friends, I'd be enthusiastic. But once we move from acquaintance to friends, then I'll be more enthusiastic.
Well, who controls that, me or you?
I feel like, I don't know. Just notice Donovan calls me back. He calls me back. I call him back.
Right.
It's a simple relationship.
Next. Thing. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. Our Monday tip of the cap goes to Jonathan David for various reasons. One, he scored the only goal in Lille's 1-0 win in a top-of-the-table clash with PSG in France. Lille now has a three-point lead on the Monster Club with seven matches to go. Unfortunately, David had to leave the game with an ankle injury and now will be out for several weeks. Here's hoping he can make it back for the end of the season title challenge, because not only a huge goal, but a huge year for Jonathan David. And speaking of Ottawa guys, Dave Smart rejoins me here on Tim and Friends. Okay, we're going with friends now, okay? I promise from now on, the return calls will be there. But like you when you were coaching, I feel like I'm busier than bleep right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Plus, it's one of those things where if you're going to return my calls, I got to be careful what I ask for.
Yeah, because wait till you go back to coaching, and then I have to light it up the other way. All right, Jesse Rubinoff, our digital producer, is going to light it up with last call. We ask a series of questions, and we give our frank and honest answer as concise as possible. Jesse, take it away!
Timmy, it's Masters Week. And yes, Jordan is. Spieth arrived in Augusta today, fresh off his first PGA Tour win in nearly 4 years. Spieth ended his drought yesterday with a win at the Texas Valero Open, his first victory since the 2017 Open Championship. Spieth is now one of the betting favorites to win this week. So, Dave, this question's for you. Will you be taking Jordan Spieth in your Masters pool, assuming you are doing a Masters pool?
He'd be one of five for sure. I mean, he's playing extremely well. I mean, I follow pretty closely. He's played extremely well and hasn't got it done all year until this weekend. But he's got to be a favorite. The course doesn't suit him great if he gets a little wild. But, I mean, his short game's so good. And, again, it's like anything else. When they play at that level and they're confident, it's hard to think that he's not going to play well.
Who's your pick? Who you got?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to go against DJ just because emotionally and length, there's a lot of things that happen, it seems like, in the Masters, and he seems to hold it together and stay together through it all. And then, I mean, he's not Tiger by any means, but I always felt like with Tiger, it wasn't so much the 60 the 66 he shot. It's more the 71s when everybody else would shoot 75. And I feel like Johnson is like that now. He didn't used to be, but now when he has a bad day, he shoots 71.
Right.
And that keeps him in it. And I feel like, you know, he gets going around Amen Corner and goes off for one or two days on Amen Corner and never has a bad stretch on the Masters. He puts himself in a position to win. And he's got no pressure because he's won.
That's true, too. I'm going to throw Cameron Smith into the pile of those.
Second in November.
That you should put into your pile of picks because I think there's some value there.
The young Aussie.
And Cameron Smith.
A little off the board pick from Timmy. All right. Aaron Rodgers begins his 2-week run as Jeopardy guest host tonight. Some clips of the show have already surfaced, including this one of one of the contestants taking a jab at Rodgers in the Packers' controversial decision to kick a field goal late in the NFC Championship game. Why don't we have a listen?
Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose 0.
Seemed like he got a little bit flustered there. Right? Go ahead, sits in the pocket. He got a little flustered.
That's not an answer you would expect from a Jeopardy contestant.
No.
Sorry, go ahead with the question.
The question is,
I'm shocked.
Tim, who do you think makes a better guest host, a 3-time NFL MVP in Rodgers or a 13-time national champion basketball coach?
Wow. Put me on the spot here. I will say that despite the new haircut that I'm enjoying, I do believe that Aaron Rodgers brings a better coif to the mix. But he did not seem comfortable at all. No. Have you seen any of the clips?
Just that one.
Smarty, have you seen anything of Aaron Rodgers hosting Jeopardy?
I saw a little bit. I mean, it was, I would agree with you. I'm not sure it was as, I mean, he was fine, but I'm not sure it was as fine as one was.
He's fine. We'll see tonight. He begins his Jeopardy hosting. He gave this like speech on Alex Trebek that they posted online. It was just weird. It was like, I'm going to honor his legacy.
I have it taped.
Do you?
Yeah. All right, we'll give the verdict tomorrow.
Do you ever tape it and then play it off of PVR with your family?
All the time. Yeah.
Do you really?
Jeopardy's incredible. Yeah, I love it.
No, I mean where you know the answers and then you play it back on PVR.
I would never do that. Okay. No.
Smart, have you ever done that?
I don't do that. Time-shifted
Jeopardy?
I feel like you're a little upset that you're not the next Jeopardy guy.
I would take it in a flash. It would be a lot less work. It would be so much easier. I'd be down, but I would be no good at it.
I don't think that's true, but we can move on. North Carolina has promoted longtime assistant and former Raptor Hubert Davis to replace Roy Williams as Tar Heels head basketball coach. Davis had been an assistant under Williams for the last 9 seasons. It was widely expected that UNC would choose someone from within the Carolina family. Dave, your successor came from within the Carleton family. Do you like keeping it in the program, or is it a mistake to limit the potential candidates?
I like this one.
Yeah, I don't think it's a mistake to limit if you've got what you want. I mean, you got to understand down there, everything is so oriented around your alumni. Like if you've got a candidate that is definitely solid, I'm not saying he's the perfect candidate. I don't know. I'm not there, but clearly they like him, and clearly he's got connections and strong connections. You don't want to upset your alumni. I mean, this is an alumni choice. I mean, in most cases, it becomes an alumni choice. Like they try to pretend, but this is. I've been through this personally where, you know, I've talked to people about jobs down there. The alumni hold so much weight. This is clearly who they want. I mean, so what are you going to do? You have no choice. That's where the money is.
Do you have time for one more, Jesse?
Yeah, one more. Let's do it. Stay in North Carolina. We're seeing more and more fans in the stands across the United States. No kidding, what we saw in Texas today. And this guy certainly seemed excited to be at yesterday's Stars Canes game in Carolina. Tim, what's the one thing you can't wait to do when you can finally attend a game in person once again?
Exactly that. I am going to go behind Jamie Campbell and Joe Siddle at Rogers Center when we're finally allowed there and do the exact same
thing. Bally Sports all over Tim and Friends these days.
Hey, Smarty, thanks for doing this. It was fun.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Enjoy.
Anytime. And who you got tonight, Gonzaga?
I hope you had a great Easter.
I did. Thank you very much. And a good Passover as well to all of those. That does it for us. We'll be back tomorrow with the Tuesday Roundtable of Arash Madani alongside. Have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.